Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to episode 2 of the Field Pass. This is Dan. Alongside me, I have Mikey and John to talk about Purdue this weekend. Big football game. We got Rondell Moore. At this point, it's Wednesday night. We're recording this episode, and he could be out. We're not sure, though.
Yeah, you know, this is Mikey here, and you know, anytime, you know, the star player from the other team is a question mark, you know, just from a player's standpoint, a coach's standpoint, you know, they still practice like he is going to be playing. So look for those guys, you know, if he is out there, that, you know, they'll have a safety, they'll have a corner. Hopefully, you know, Nate Hobbs or Tony Adams will be keying on, you know, Rondell Moore the entire game if he does play. But that's, you know, like you said, Dan, that's a huge question mark going into Saturday. So, you know, looking forward to seeing when Coach Brohm and the Boilermakers release, you know, who is playing and who isn't. Because, you know, if Rondell is out, it's definitely going to be a big time advantage for the Illini.
Yeah, and they still have the accountability that needs to go to David Bell, who in his own right is a star wide receiver. And it would be very fortunate for a pass defense that looked pretty porous at times, or for a majority of the game against Wisconsin, if they could have that break go their way. We tweeted out, don't forget to follow us at the Field Pass on Twitter, but we tweeted out how it would be a pretty unfamiliar feeling for us Illini fans if we don't have to face Rondell Moore two of the 3 years that he'll be in college. And but nevertheless, we'll still have to make sure that they are keying on David Bell, and that's probably the name of the game on defense, is making sure that the passing attack of one Jeff Brohm does not beat you.
So it's been a couple days now, I guess, to digest Wisconsin. How are you guys feeling? Where are your heads at right now?
You know, I'm super pumped for this week. You know, when during our last talk, you know, I probably seemed extremely out of it because, you know, like most fans, it seemed that, you know, I'd already given up hope, but now, you know, it's turned a new leaf. You know, I'm super excited for this game because, you know, I truly think that, you know, the guys are going to come out excited to play. You know, they read the press clippings, you know, they watch the sports channel at night. So they know a lot of the backlash that they were receiving, you know, with some of the higher expectations that we did have going into this year, just, you know, bringing back a whole bunch of starters, you know, on all three phases of the ball. So, you know, I'm super pumped. You know, hopefully we can go out there and, you know, give it to Purdue. But, you know, as we saw last week in their game against Iowa, they like to throw the ball all over the field. So it'll be a tough task for our defense. But, you know, knowing Coach Smith and knowing some of those older guys on the team, you know, hopefully that they're going to put last week behind them and come out really ready to go.
Yeah, Mikey, one of the things that I love that you said on the Wisconsin recap pod was how the coaches and the players are going to go into this game thinking that this is week one and then you got to get out of it 1-0. And I think, you know, most you hear that kind of coach speak or the cliche where it's, oh, we're trying to go 1-0 every week. But at the same time, I think when you have that big of a defeat in week one, then you've got to rebound and just completely put out of your mind and think, okay, season starts next week. And I think that they can, there's a lot more areas that you can take advantage of a Purdue team. Especially when you look at some of the stats from the Iowa game where they came out and they surprised, they still gave up a fair amount of rushing yards, which is, I think, bodes well for the Illini offense that frankly needs to get on track in a hurry. It needs to make sure that they're staying ahead of the sticks and taking care of business. But I think that's probably where it, much like the game last year. Now, granted, last year they had the advantage of it being very rainy, making both teams one dimensional, and U of I is much better suited for a slugfest in the rain where it's power running than the semi air raid attack of Purdue. But at the same time, it seemed like there's still some issues with that Purdue front seven that you could take advantage of in terms of making sure that you're getting your zone blocking taken care of and getting after the boys.
You mentioned last year, and I know I remember watching that game and how it was muddy and rainy, and I think we threw 5 or 6 passes the entire game. But so I double checked the weather. Just, I know it's Wednesday night, little premature, but 58 degrees, I think, and sunny. So I don't think we're gonna.
We were talking about this earlier too,
because you know, anybody who's been to Memorial Stadium knows the wind there gets swirling, and
oh yeah,
you know, 18 mile an hour winds projected on Saturday, which is big, you know, especially for a team like Purdue where they throw the ball all over the field. So hopefully, you know, we can use that wind to our advantage and you know, use it to not only get our running game going, but also help our defense in slowing down their passing game.
How often do you guys, when you were playing, would you practice in the stadium versus on the practice fields? And is there a difference in the wind when you're out there in the actual stadium?
Yeah, no, it's. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, a lot of teams or a lot of people outside of most football programs probably don't understand this. And, you know, I speak from experience of Coach Smith, but he hated turf. You know, he hated playing on turf. Just, I think it had something to do with the injuries. You know, there's a higher chance of, you know, getting an ankle stuck, knee stuck, whatever, and getting hurt. So we would actually practice, you know, Monday through Wednesday, we'd be on our grass practice fields. And then Thursday, Friday in the stadium for walkthroughs. So majority of our time was spent, you know, outside of the stadium. But even when you go into the stadium on the Thursday, you know, before, and that wind's moving, it's tough, especially, you know, I feel for those punt returners this weekend because, you know, when it's swirling down on the field, it might not seem super windy, but, you know, up higher in the nosebleeds, as people would call it, that wind gets moving and the ball, you know, can move any which way. So I'm hoping, you know, with our strong leg of Blake Hayes that, you know, we can really win the field position battle using that wind to our advantage.
Yeah. Get that South Farm stank just blowing all the way across campus.
Yeah, exactly. But we'll see. I mean, I'm sure Purdue, you know, they probably got wind up there just like we do. So,
yeah.
Yeah, West Lafayette isn't a bustling metropolitan area. They probably have something similar to the South Farms in their area as well. But yeah, maybe the weapon that is Blake Hayes, I mean, he's so good with knowing how to cut the ball in the wind or loft it up when it's at its back. He plays that so well. And hopefully we don't need to turn this into a Robert special teams rant, but hopefully the boys will maybe make a couple plays, force a couple fumbles, maybe get a lucky muff here or there if the wind really is swirling as much as it's projected to be.
Yeah.
But maybe that's enough talking about the external factors of the game.
I'd be remiss if we didn't make mention. I mean, we briefly talked about Rondell there, but David Bell, right?
Yep.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
that dude's a beast.
He's just as good as advertised, right? Freshman of the year returning. How many? He had a touchdown or two last week.
He had 13 catches, 120 yards, and 3 touchdowns. And fun fact about David Bell is I've been following him since high school because he went to the same high school as Jeff George, and Jeff George's younger brother was his high school quarterback.
Oh, wow.
So that kid, yeah, he had offers all over the place. But, you know, similar to Rondell, he wanted to go to Purdue, make a name for himself, and, you know, he's doing just that. Yeah,
Brom's churning him out. It's a pretty easy recruiting sell when it's, hey, we're going to be throwing the ball all around the field, and you'll get your touches, and it's not at least from when was hired till now, they're not a hotbed for NFL talent receivers, so they were able to come in and make early contributions, and you can see that they're correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't Rondale Moore from the same area as Nate Hobbs? I can't remember reading a story that Nate Hobbs was telling the coaches that they should get on Rondale Moore and get him into the system if they could, but nothing ever. Imagine him being on this team. That would be, maybe it'd still be hurt as much, and we'd be like, oh, a classic Illini luck.
Absolute game breaker in the on offense. I mean,
Yes, sounds like someone we know, a stud freshman coming in and lighting it up, and then
the injury bug.
Yeah.
I was like, it would be nice to just have a guy like that, that you just hand the ball off, get the ball in his hands and get him space and just let him go to work. It's, they don't come often, but when you have a guy like that, you can, I mean, I just remember Rondell, was it last year when they beat Ohio State, or is that 2 years ago now?
Two years ago now.
But he single-handedly seemed like he won them that game, which is unbelievable for one player and a freshman at that, right? To come in and take down a giant just kind of by himself. That was one of the best individual performances I've seen outside of a quarterback in maybe my college football history, that game.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible, like you said. But I want to touch on one thing here and actually get some of your guys' thoughts. So just looking at the box score last week of, you know, Purdue versus Iowa, Purdue threw the ball 50 times. So we know they like to air it out. What do you guys think is going to happen with our secondary this week? Like, do you think they're going to test us deep? You think they're going to try to open up the run game? Or what are kind of your thoughts about that going into this week?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see, especially with the, I don't know, coaches definitely have to be aware of factors like the wind, but when you're a college quarterback, you got to be able to cut through that at a certain amount. And I don't know if Aiden O'Connell's arm is quite the strongest, but I don't think it's going to limit them, because they do like to go that Brahm style of making sure you're stretching the field and getting some east and west routes as well. But he's also adept enough as an offense. I mean, if we're as a Lion fans able to sit there and dissect the defense and be like, hey, there's historically a hole right in the middle of the field behind the linebackers in front of the safeties. He knows that, okay, if the wind's taking our throws and when we're going to the boundary, we're not able to complete them like we would be able, like we'd want to, if we have guys getting separation, then we're just going to probably work maybe you'll see a little more play action than you normally would with a Purdue team and try and get them some action up the seams or getting guys sitting in the middle and maybe some screens or something like that. But I think it's still going to be, you know, that they're going to pass that many times. The interesting part too is that they still found a way to get Xander Horvath 21 rushes, and right, he was still put up a very productive game, even if you take away. So he had 21 rushes for 129 yards, which is 6 yards a carry. And even if you take away his long of 33, you're still getting 20 carries for about 100 yards, and still a very productive rushing attack for Purdue last week against Iowa, which is a similar, I mean, you'd argue a more disciplined defense than what U of I's had in recent vintage, but a similar, you know, they play better against the pro style and they're more of a beat you down kind of defense, which is, I think, what Lovey would like to have in terms of just rushing four and getting home with good athletes.
Yeah, I'd imagine, so, just to answer Mikey's question here again, but after looking at the tape, they run back that tape, they see those deep, quick strikes that Wisconsin, and I would think they'd be licking their chops thinking, we can, like John said, maybe suck them in on a play action and go over the top with burners like Bell, and if Rondell does end up playing, you got guys that can stretch a defense. So I think that's definitely got to be a focal point, and maybe they think that Illinois knows that, and then they just beat us with the run all game, and Illinois is, you know, sitting back and not allowing those deep balls. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, but I gotta imagine, you know, stick with the recipe that seems to have been working for Wisconsin and throw it deep.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I think, you know, I feel like we're always talking about turnovers with Lovey, but, you know, if we don't win the turnover battle, you know, we need at least three turnovers, causing three turnovers on defense, because, you know, Purdue is so powerful and they're so dynamic in what they can do on offense. You know, we're going to have to, you know, swallow our pride and understand that there's probably going to be one or two, you know, deep balls that go for 30 plus yards, and you're going to have to live with that. But, you know, you can't have it where, you know, just like the Wisconsin game, you know, the quarterback starts off 20 of 20 and, you know, doesn't even get sniffed by the defensive line. So we need to get pressure on the quarterback to, you know, get some off balance throws so we can get some picks and throw off their rhythm and set our offense up in good field position.
Yeah. One of the, I guess the nice developments is that Tariq Barnes, I don't know if, how many people saw, but the official Illini football Twitter account tweeted out that he was the second highest graded per Football Focus, which, you know, take that for what you will, but he was the second highest graded Big Ten defender last week, which is incredibly impressive. And you know, maybe it's just a fluke. Maybe it's because they weren't game plan. I mean, I don't know how much you can quite game plan for a Jake Hansen other than, okay, he's out. We're going to try and run it up the middle because right. now their best player is out and then nothing happens. So I don't know how much of that you could deem quite a fluke per se, but I think that was a nice little development that even if Jake isn't good to go this week, we're still going to have some confidence in the linebacking core being able to take care of any run game issues. And hopefully I think he's a little bit taller than Jake, so maybe he'll be a little bit more of a lengthy presence there in the middle of the field for any seam routes or anything like that.
Yeah, there are a couple, I know, injury question marks going into the week, or I believe Isaiah Gay was out last game, suspended. Hopefully he's back. And then you got Devin Witherspoon, who was out. He was injured. Remains to be seen if he'll play. And then Jake Hansen, obviously that scary injury. Hoping, you know, he gets healthy, whether he's playing this week or a few weeks down the line. But you got to step up, and you know, there's no time to sit back and be sorry for yourself. So,
Mikey, did you ever have anything like that? I mean, obviously, it's a very scary thing seeing Jake stumble around the field like that. But I don't seem to remember anything in terms of like a game. But did you ever have anything in practice where you really got your bell rung and you were like, "Oh, I cannot stand. I can't see." Or anything like that?
Thankfully, you know, that never happened to me. But I, you know, obviously seen it happen to guys 5 feet away from me, and it's a pretty scary thing. But, you know, I spoke to Jake after the game last week and just to check in and see how he was doing. Cause you know, as all of us saw, it looked horrible. You know, he was stumbling all over the field. And he told me, you know, he just got his bell rung and, you know, he was going to go into the concussion protocol like, you know, everybody thought he would. So we'll see how that went for him this week, and we'll see if he's out there on Saturday. But, you know, sometimes you do just get your bell rung, you know, get shaken up a bit, and, you know, it looks a lot worse than it really is. So, you know, hopefully we have Mr. Hansen out there on Saturday because we could definitely use him.
Yeah. Who was that that caught him as he was stumbling? Because that was
a big play. I think it was – was it Nate Hobbs?
Hobbs was it? Yeah.
Someone... Well, Kalen was the one who eventually round him up and was just like, of course, yeah. The little stout boy just – in his ground and making sure that he got up and kind of was caught and caught his footing and then he started walking in and then stumbled and then Kalen was like, okay, I'm gonna grab you and hold you.
Yeah, that was good awareness there.
Yeah, that was I not to make it a John Bayless memory of high school days, but the only time I ever had anything like that happen was we were doing like a tackling drill and practice freshman year. I just remember like me and a buddy went head to head and like my right eye was completely black. Like I had eyes open and my left eye, I could only see out of like the upper left quadrant of it. And I was like, this is it. I just remember taking off my
helmet.
That's
not how my eyes work. They're supposed to work.
Yeah. I was like, this is a drill that I'm not going to like, cause we were just going through a couple reps and I was like, I'm going to stop doing this and not hurt myself. But sometimes with that, to speak to Mikey's point about Jake just saying that he got his bell rung, I know the whole concussion issue is a ordeal in and of itself. With how much research is out there, but usually with it's not worse, but you get those guys up in the lines that have a worse after effects because they have so many subconcussive hits. Whereas guys like receivers or DBs or maybe even stuff like that with linebackers, it's worse if you're it's not as bad if you're getting just one big hit. Obviously you don't want that to happen a ton to your brain, but it might not be, you know, if we see Jake out there this weekend, it might be a case of, okay, he had that one devastating hit, but it wasn't anything that really messed him up too bad. Whereas if it was, okay, he had several traumatic hits during a week and then it, you know, came to with that kind of hit, then okay, maybe he's out for a couple of weeks, but
yeah,
it seemed like that was early enough that he should be good. I don't know. I'm not going to speak to a guy in the protocol.
Right. Well, how about we, let's maybe talk a little offense. Let's talk, Illinois last week. No points on offense. Nothing to show for that.
Can only go up.
I mean, not a whole lot of time spent on the field on offense, but hopefully I'm thinking, you know, Purdue's a little better matchup you got to go get points, and you got to get points early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm looking at us to, you know, establish the run game early. And what that does is opens up the back half of the field for, you know, a deep shot to Bebe, or, you know, even a little running back leak out, wheel route to Epstein for, you know, a 50-yard touchdown, just something to give us some momentum. So look for, you know, the offensive line to, you know, really lock in this week, because after that, you know, poor performance last week, and, you know, those guys are, it's a brotherhood in there. You know, I know they all took it personal. I know they all, you know, are willing to, you know, put in that extra hour of film time or whatever they need to do to, you know, make sure they're ready to go for Saturday. So look for them to come out ready to go, moving that defensive line, and, you know, us establishing the run game early so we can open up the passing game.
Yeah, and even though they do have some studs up front with Neil being probably the biggest piece in there.
That's a big boy.
That will definitely, yeah, he will definitely pose an issue.
Wait, sorry to stop you quick. Was Lorenzo Neal, was he the one? I remember there was a defensive lineman in 2017 when Crouch was playing quarterback against Purdue. He personal foul, like roughing the passer, and then like walked over him and kicked his helmet off.
I'd kick Chase's helmet off?
Yeah, and got another penalty. I don't know if it was Neil. I don't want to put it out there if it wasn't him, and I apologize for that. But for some reason, I thought it – or maybe he got a bad personal foul last year against a team that lost him the game. I don't know. I'll have to do some more digging on that.
I know he's big and he's nasty, so he's going to be a force, and they're going to have to handle. And then Karloftis too, right, is another big-time player. So –
yeah,
they had a good test last week against Wisconsin, but I mean, it's not going to get a whole lot easier against this Purdue front four.
Yeah, I agree, because, you know, they got experience too, and, you know, but so do we. And we were all super excited for our offensive line. And, you know, like I said earlier, I think they're going to come out swinging and ready to go to try to make a statement to, you know, elevate and get this team to, you know, one in the W column.
And I think one thing that we as fans can take solace in is that last year they were running so much against stacked boxes. I mean, you had Purdue putting, you know, 8-9 guys near the line of scrimmage, depending on, you know, the offensive set that Illinois is running, but they were still running with a fair amount of success. Now, granted, you would like to be able to throw out of that, but with the conditions and how little passing effectiveness was taking place last year, that wasn't quite going to be the case, but you'd hope that you can at least build off that template. And even if they are stacking the box, and you might be able to use a little deception, or
let Brandon run.
Yeah,
that's right.
Get him out there and get him some yardage to get that. Cause yeah, I think we can all agree the running game is going to be what leads the offense to at least some points this year,
yeah,
or this year or this game.
Yeah.
We gonna talk about our boy Isaiah Williams, Lil Uno. I think he's gonna get more run at the quarterback position. Maybe see him out there, you know, wide receiver again. Do you think that experiment didn't go over that well last game, and Rod, you know, goes away from that? What do you guys see there?
I want to see him out on the field somewhere, and, you know, just having played one game for Coach Rod Smith. He's a very creative guy. You know, we saw it at West Virginia. We saw it at Michigan, Arizona, all over the place. He's a very creative offensive mind. And if something doesn't work, he's going to find something that does. So, you know, I would like to think that they're going to come out with some packages for Lil Uno to get him some touches. But, you know, I want to see him out there. I want to see him, you know, get some drives where he's not, you know, looking over his shoulder if he makes a mistake, knowing that he's going to get pulled. So I want to see the offense first get into rhythms with Brandon Peters,
yeah,
get some points on the board, and then come in for a little change of pace with Lil Uno so he can, you know, take one for 80 yards like we've all been waiting on.
It worries me just a little bit that, you know, when you have a quarterback, like, rhythm's so key, and if Brandon's out there and he's trying to get in a rhythm, and then you come in and you bring someone new, part of me's worried that throws off, you know, both he and Lil Uno, and it ends up being a detractor for both rather than, you know, a complimentary piece or, you know, a series here or there. So I do think he's obviously as talented as they come, and he's has a bright future in the orange and blue, but I have a little bit of reserve about whether, you know, bringing him in and throwing off rhythm is, you know, a detractor more than a positive for the team.
Yeah, maybe Rod takes a page out of the Jeff Brown playbook and makes Little Uno into a mini Rondale Moore.
That would be
and
nice.
And we use him around the field a little bit more in the run game with him as a slot receiver or lined up next to Brandon, or even in the passing game a little bit too.
Double reverse pass.
Yeah, possibly get a. Maybe you do the Philly special and get Brandon and his legs out there on the edge. I don't know. Actually, last year we tried something like that with Casey Washington. I don't know if you guys remember that play, but Casey Washington, who's surprisingly a lefty. I don't know why I would think he was a right hand, because I just assume everyone is. But I remember him throwing up the biggest of ducks, and Brandon was at like the 3-yard line, and I think it landed at like the 6.
Against Purdue, right?
Yeah, it was against Purdue. Just a wet ball, no one's catching it, and he's just heaving it up to him.
He was one of the 6 passes thrown in that game. Was
yes,
Casey Washington,
but
probably not how you draw it up.
Yeah, to Isaiah, I you'd hope that maybe the offense is so dominant that he's not needed as a quarterback as much. But at the same time, even if they are going out there and putting up productive drives, you can still mix them in for a drive or two in the first half. Maybe if it's an effective first half, it's maybe a drive or two in the second half, but we'll see.
Yeah, Dan, just to piggyback off what you were saying a little bit, I feel like, you know, obviously this can go one of two ways. You know, either we bring them in and it completely stalls the offense,
right,
or we bring them in to get something going. So, you know, that's going to be the pros and cons of it that, you know, the coaches are going to have to weigh given, you know, the scenario or the situations that's going on in the game. But, you know, it could either be really good or, you know, really bad.
Yeah. So I'm hoping the sample size is small at this point, and we, you know, we've just seen the bad of it, and there's enough plays that that he can make that he makes up for it. And then some, with a few maybe deep either catches running, you know, just blowing the cover off the defense, or, you know, get him in space and see what he can do. But it's just hard to say at this point. We've only seen him out there for a few series, and the defense seems to be keying on him every time he's out there and, you know, behind center. Yeah. So I think he's making the right reads thus far. And if you just get him more reps, you know, maybe we see something a little more from him. I do want to talk about the targets last week, right? It seemed like Bebe got, doesn't seem like he got the vast majority of those targets. And I know there's a lot of talk. I saw a lot of Illini fans talking about the lack of targets to the tight ends and some of the other receivers. Luke Ford wasn't really involved. Was Daniel Amater Bebe didn't play.
He didn't take a snap.
So, I mean, we'll see if he's, I think that was an injury question, but if he's healthy, Rod's got to seemingly get more guys the ball so that, you know, not everyone's keying on it. And I think part of that too is on Brandon to make those reads and find the ball rather than keying on one or two guys, you know, making the offense a little more one dimensional. So what do you guys think? How is Rod going to mix it up and get the ball in a few different players' hands this week?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a trickle-down effect sometimes with the offense, where Brandon sometimes seems like he's only making one read. But I think that's part because he has a favorite target and he likes – I know last year it was a lot of Ricky Smalling early and often. And then once he got hurt, then it turned into he found out, oh, yeah, I've got an all-Big Ten wide receiver in Josh Amater Bebe, so he started targeting him more, but he's still finding a way to spread it around a little bit. But I also think that some of that is emblematic of the O-line not being able to pass protect as long as you would like. And Mikey, I know you touched on that last episode about how he's not able to go through his progressions like you would hope, and he's like, okay, even if the first progression isn't Bebe, it's if I have to make a quick read or a hot read and just get it out, I know that Josh is going to be, you know, hooking up for a curl on the left side, and I'm just going to send it over to him if there's no one draped all over him. Or even if there is, I'll throw it over his head. So maybe it's one of those where it's kind of everything needs to get shorn up, where he does need to go through his reads, but he also needs a little bit more time, and maybe the play calling needs to be a little bit different so the guys are getting separation. So hopefully they can, you know, make those adjustments and get after it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, there are some plays where, you know, the tight ends are first in the progression, but, you know, more often than not, it's going to be slot receivers and the outside guys. So, you know, if Brandon can get the protection that, you know, even 2-3 seconds, so he can get to those second and third progressions, you know, look for those tight ends to get involved in the game. And, you know, who knows, maybe the coaches will see, you know, we need to get them more involved. So they'll start putting some more, you know, tight end first read type plays into the script for this week.
Yeah. And personally, I almost feel like targets and is a little bit overrated of a stat. I mean, if a guy's open, I don't care if you throw it to him 100 times or you throw it to him 10 times, but it's just when you find a target, you're throwing a lot of incomplete balls to the same guy. That's where I have a problem with it. So if you know, if Josh Madubuike is getting open and he's, you know, he gets 20 targets and he catches, you know, 12, 15 balls or something, I'm all for that. But if, you know, you have that high of a number and the completion percentage is low still, that's when I, you know, I worry about distributing the ball.
And there should be enough talent, you would hope, with the other guys. Even if it's just, you know, getting the ball to Donnie, sure-handed guy who's, you know, is going to be able to find a way to find a hole in his zone and just get a quick, you know, rhythm breaker for the defense and get in front of the sticks. And maybe you think they'll probably be keying on Josh a lot for their game plan. But yeah, maybe, I mean, even that incompletion of Luke Ford last week was just seeing him as he's standing there with the Wisconsin linemen were the defensive players were leaning over a little bit. So they look smart, but that man is a big dude. Even when he was on a punt return as well, surprisingly, I was like, why is he on the end of the line? But he's still just a large human that you got to find a way to get him involved. And hopefully he gets his share of targets. And
it looks good to see him in an Illinois jersey at long last. You know,
exactly.
He's been through it, but it was good seeing him out there. And I hope they can get him involved. You did mention Donnie Navarro. Mikey's picked a click from last week. How many catches did he have? One? Did he have one?
No, he didn't have any. I think he had one target, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, so, we discussed that on the pod.
So yeah, maybe one target. Maybe, you know, you don't want to be our pick to click. But do we want to get into picks of the week for this week? You guys have someone in mind?
Yeah, let's I'll start it off.
Yeah.
So my pick of the week this week is gonna be my man Brandon Peters. And you know, not a good game last week throwing the ball, had a decent time running the ball, two long rushes. So look for him to come out, you know, fifth year senior, come out, you know, shut the haters up, as people like to say, and you know, put the team on my back. I'm not saying, you know, he's gonna win the game for us, but just look for him to, you know, be in control and, you know, put us in the right position to win the game. So, you know, I don't think he's going to be that game winner, but I also don't think he's going to be that game loser. So I'm thinking he's going to come out, you know, and play the game that, you know, we all expected he would play against Wisconsin.
I like that. The man
Mikey picking
center.
Number 18.
That's right. Yeah, got a ride with the 18. Yeah.
Who's the second or, you know, best player to wear the 18 jersey?
Oh, man.
You and Brandon Peters.
Know. Yeah, I'm gonna go BP on this one.
All right,
a humble man.
Yeah,
yeah, oh yeah.
John, what do you think? Who you got?
I am going to go with Tony Adams. Obviously, had the pick six last year against Purdue, and I'm hoping he continues a little of that that mo over into this year's game, whether it be at corner or safety. If you know you get Devin Witherspoon back, maybe you can have him help with the issues we saw last week, even though I think he likes playing corner a little bit more. And if he's a different, I can see him being a difference maker there, containing David Bell. So I'm thinking he's going to have a big game. He's always good for, you know, a couple run sticks here or there. He's not quite the most athletic guy, but.
Are we going to see some defensive points again this week?
I'm going to go no. but you will see I'm going over 2.5 turnovers.
Okay. I like that.
I mean, when you throw the ball that much, like if you can get enough of a pass rush on just, you know, a couple plays where, you know, if Isaiah Gay is back, if it was just a one game suspension, you know, he gets a strip sack fumble recovery, or you get, you know, a tip ball that goes to the safeties and get a pick here or there, and maybe just Aiden O'Connell biffs one and throws it right to a guy. So I'm thinking when you get an offense that's trying to spread the ball around that much and running as many plays as they do, that you're going to have opportunities to create turnovers. And it's kind of something I was saying in the last pod, you need to be able to make those plays. You got to minimize the dumb plays and make the plays when they come to you. So you can't be dropping picks, got to recover those fumbles if they're, you know, in your lap. And that's what I'm going over 2.5. You heard it here first.
Okay. Tony Adams, I am going to go with another secondary player as well, and I'm gonna stick to my pick from last week. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. I'm going Nate
Hobbs. Are we allowed to do that?
How original.
I mean I'll change it up at some point. There's no rules telling me I can't pick him twice. He had a good game last week.
We can make him up.
That's right. But I
think he did do well last week.
I think he looked good in run support, and I think he's gonna be keying on David Bell and maybe Rondell if he's out there, and we're going to need him to have a big game. So I think this is his moment, and I'm hoping he can shut those guys down and prevent that deep ball from burning us again.
I like it.
All right. No Robert this week for his pick, but we'll tweet out.
Force him. Yeah, we'll get him to tweet out something.
Yeah.
I'm going to say he's probably going Blake Hayes.
You think so?
A little special teams.
Yeah, especially after
honestly, it's not that bad of a pick.
No, he's unreal.
I mean, if he's pinning guys inside the 10 all game long, that's a pretty
it's
big
about field position,
weapon.
Maybe.
Yeah, he had that post this week, so we know that. Yeah, Blake Hayes is not a bad pick, but we'll get Robert to respond, or we'll tweet it out. We'll maybe put it to Illini Nation, get a vote out there, and see what people are thinking. But I'm going boring. I'm going Nate Hobbs. So pick two, week two.
All good. Hey, Dan, I know we had we put something out there on Twitter for, you know, some listeners or followers to ask us some questions. What do you say we rip through some of those?
Yeah. Let me pull them up here real quick. All right.
Once again, if you're not following us on Twitter, I know I plugged it earlier, but at the Field Pass. And then you can interact with us and give us great questions, and we'll shout you out, and you can be famous on the internet.
All right. First question from our boy Sam. Sam's going to be hosting the boardroom with the boys. So look for that on Illini board coming in the next few weeks. Sam's question said, obviously a lot of blown coverage assignments versus Wisconsin. How much of that is usually coaching versus players not reading the play correctly versus just not having enough experience at a position?
Yeah, I'll start this one off. You know, I think, you know, we do have experience somewhat in the secondary. So I don't know if that was the reasoning. And the thing where I would have to believe they were messed up in is, you know, when teams come out in different formations, you know, sometimes you'll have trips to one side, you'll have, you know, spread where you have two receivers on each side. It changes up the coverage and who you're supposed to key on. So I have a feeling that, you know, it was lack of preparation, not necessarily by the coaches, because I feel like they knew what they were going to get. So they were taught that, but I would have to assume that it was lack of preparation in the secondary by those guys. You know, blowing those coverages by not putting in that extra time to, you know, watch the film and look for the keys on in within different formations. So that's what I'm going with, and hopefully, you know, they can fix that, you know, tape that up, and otherwise, you know, it's going to be a long Saturday, that's for sure.
Yeah, my only real add on to that would be that, you know, maybe there's something with, because Derek Smith, I think he'd probably be the first one to tell you, and I think all of our eyeballs told us that he probably didn't have the greatest game out there. And I guess we can make an excuse for him, but he, you know, he came here and he was told he's going to be a linebacker, and then there was that whole issue with Trayshawn Smith, the safety from Louisville, who was going to be a member of the squad this year, and then he ended up, you know, for whatever reason, not being on the team. And they had a need at safety, and I think Tony Adams might be a solution to that. But then with the cornerback issues, then Derek Smith had to step up a little bit more, and maybe his familiarity with reading keys or what the defense is asking him, because it's his first game at U of I, maybe he just didn't understand exactly what he needed to be doing, and hopefully, you know, he's making the requisite corrections and studying the film and making those strides so that he can be more effective, and the guys and the back are not giving up some bombs this week.
Yeah, anytime a guy gets that open, there's obviously some sort of miscommunication or misread, and it's, you know, it's up to those players to make those right reads. Obviously, the coaches are teaching them that, and it's just attention to detail and making sure you don't miss an assignment that ends up looking, you know, pretty poor on national television. All right, let's look at another question here. Brad Stahl, he's asking, how concerned are you that the Smith and Smith experience just isn't working out? So kind of a hot seat question. A little early in the season for that, but
yeah. Thoughts? I think we can follow Roberts. He tweeted about it today, how essentially, to paraphrase, he's not going to talk about another man's job. Yeah. So I don't think we're gonna quite delve into the hot seat nature of Smith and Smith. I think with Lovey, you kind of know what you're getting at this point with his defense. And we've seen it now that he's been the DC. It's going to be a lot of trying to force turnovers, a little bit more stout against I guess it wasn't so much so against Wisconsin, but last year you at least saw signs of, you know, not giving up super bad productive games, and they were keeping everything close, and it wasn't quite like 2018 where you had 63-0 versus Iowa. But yeah. I think you kind of know what you're getting with Lovie Smith and with Rod Smith. Mikey was talking about the creativity that he has, and he's shown it other places, and I would just hope that he unleashes that a little bit more. I mean, I think you saw a good amount of that with when you had AJ Bush as more of a running quarterback, and you had a little bit more that you could do with play action and RPOs, and maybe he doesn't feel as comfortable with Brandon. But hey, if you hashtag let Brandon run and then get him rocking, and you open some stuff up in the back half of the defense, then maybe they can put up some points. So I think it just comes down to him focusing in and making sure his game plan is sound and not getting thrown off if, you know, there's something like a fumble on the second play of the game, and that you're staying true to your script and calling plays where you think you'd want to. Not saying that he wasn't. I'm not in his head, obviously, but you'd hope that you'd see a little bit more productivity, because that was a pretty poor effort last week all around.
Yeah, I agree with – sorry, Dan. I agree with everything you said there, John. Obviously, you know, football, it's about wins and losses, right? And anytime you're not winning, you know, people are going to question your ability to, you know, get the job done. And, you know, knowing Coach Smith, both of them, they would be the first to say that, you know, that what they put out on the field last Saturday is, you know, unacceptable and not why they coach. You know, you don't coach to get beat 45-7 or whatever it was. So, you know, I know that, you know, they're as motivated as ever, and, you know, they're going to come out and execute this weekend. And, you know, we'll see. But it's, you know, you got to start winning. You know, that's the name of the game. So once they start winning and get things turning around, you know, I think we'll be in good shape.
Yeah, and I want to keep perspective on it too. It's just one game. It's game one.
Exactly.
Game one of the season.
And we saw last year, like, you know, we lost to Eastern Michigan, and everybody was like calling for Coach Smith. And then, you know, a few weeks later, you come out and beat number 6 Wisconsin, go on a 4-game winning streak, turn the season around.
Tone totally changes, and, you know, everyone's celebrating. So, I mean, you played a top 20 Wisconsin team on the road, first game of the season, in a weird, you know, year with coronavirus and everything going on. It was a lot of an unknown, and it was a beatdown that got out of hand, but first half of the game until the last couple minutes, it was, you know, you're in the game and, you know, playing good football, I thought. So it is one game. I don't want to make any, you know, rash judgments or quick judgments on one game of the season when you can go out and win this one and people forget. And you're like, you know, I think most people expected, you know, if you ask them before the game, do you beat Wisconsin? I think majority of people are going to say, no, you don't beat Wisconsin. Maybe you put up a better effort than we did, but you know, it's one tick in the loss column versus, you know, it might feel worse, but at the end of the day, you forget about it, you move on, improve, and hopefully get a big win and get that record back to 500, get people talking.
Yeah, just sorry, I'm still on this topic, probably drained out. I'll this keep topic, talking. But
now
you know, like, good. Since they're both Coach Smith, I'm gonna say Lovey. Like, as everyone knows, Lovey brought the Bears to the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah.
He knows what he's doing. It's just now about the team going out there and executing what they go through during the week. So, you know, once that starts flowing and we get in a rhythm, you know, we're going to shock a lot of people.
Yeah, he's about as high level of a coach. Not a whole lot of guys get to say they were wearing the headset on the sideline of a Super Bowl. So we know he's got the talent, and it's just, you know, getting his guys to follow him and hopefully prove that, you know, his coaching prowess is all it's cracked up to be.
Exactly.
I will throw in another question from one Rick Dudek, someone you may know, Mikey, asking about what's the plan to stop Moore and Bell?
Well, Dad, to start off,
you know this guy?
Rondell Moore is not playing this week, so we got that box checked.
Maybe. We don't know that.
Yeah,
hopefully.
Is Mikey Dudek breaking news at the field pass?
As of
time of recording.
As of now, Wednesday, he is not playing that we know of. So hopefully we don't have to worry about him. But then just David Bell, you know, they're going to stretch our secondary. That's for sure. They're going to try to hit us deep. They're going to try to hit us over the middle. So hopefully we correct, you know, our mistakes from last week, especially those missed assignments, those blown coverages, so we can really shut him down. And John, you touched on this earlier, look for Nate Hobbs to, you know, follow him around, you know, two best players, offense, defense, you know, I'm excited to watch that matchup. That's for sure.
Is there an equivalent to like a box in one defense in basketball where you just have one guy chasing David Bell around, the rest of the team just sitting in zone coverage or whatever?
Yeah, there is, but generally you'd have some safety help over top.
Yeah,
exactly. You bracket them, and something the New England Patriots do, I believe they still do this, is the first receiver, they put their second best corner guarding the best receiver with safety help over top, and then they one-on-one their top corner with their second best receiver.
Yep.
So they switch it up, and I think that's a cool concept, and clearly it's worked for them.
Yeah.
Usually the McCourty twins are taking out a receiver number one.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we try to implement that this week with David Bell if he's the killer.
Yeah. I think for me, even if Rondell Moore is playing, I think keeping them on the sideline as much as you can is the way that you stop them. They're going to get theirs. They're going to be throwing the ball around a lot. You can try and contain them when they're on the field, but it's kind of like you just got to play keep away and have the offense string together productive drives. You know, as cliche as it sounds, but I would hope that Rod Smith, you know, looks in, and I know Robert actually wrote an article about it and some of his concerns he kind of had with Rod Smith's quote saying that he's not really thinking a whole lot about time of possession. It's more about, you know, the plays that he's calling and trying to create explosive plays. But in the back of his mind, he's got to know that the time of possession was about as bad as it can get in a single game sample. So you would think that maybe he's, you know, not getting too simple and just inside zone. We're going to, you know, run the clock down to two before you snap the ball. But hopefully he's a little bit more cognizant of it and his play call. And so that the guys are maybe not going for the deep shots here or there and looking more to move the sticks. And like I said, maybe get Donnie the ball a little bit on like a 7-yard out route instead of, hey, we're going to take a deep shot to Josh and see if we can hit him where it hurts. And that would be my plan, at least, to when you look at two difference makers that most of the Big Ten can't account for. Just keep them off the field.
Yeah, I agreed. All right, let's maybe get one more question here. And this one might lead us into our game predictions. But Danny Juarez asked the question, minimum points scored by the offense in order to win this game. You guys want to take that? Maybe I guess we could go with our predictions and discuss that.
I think you got to score 31. I think it's going to be Yeah, which is why, which is
I was literally thinking 31 in my head, and then you pop out 31. But
yeah, I was waffling between. I just don't. I was thinking maybe high 20s, but there's just no way that you're gonna be able to, if the weather isn't, you know, as rainy as it was last year, that Purdue isn't gonna be able to get at least a couple touchdown drives. Just the nature of the defense. So you're looking at, you know, cut 14 points there, maybe a couple bad field position, at least for the Illini defense, where they, you know, it's a 21 and then a couple field goals here and there and gets them a 30. And so I'm thinking the offense is going to have to put up 31, which after last week is a little bit of a scary thought. I don't know. Do we want to do predictions right now? Should I just go right into my prediction?
Go for it.
Yeah. So what the spread is Purdue -7. And the over under, I think we saw a couple different places, but we're going to go with 58.5. And I think I would go under and the Illini to cover, but only by 6. So we'll say 30-24 will be my final score prediction. 3 touchdowns and a field goal for the boys. And maybe they get that late drive to get down the field, and hopefully they can make it happen and make me eat my words. But I'm just not seeing the dub as of right now.
Mikey, what do you think?
Yeah, so I just said earlier, 31 was my score as well. And not necessarily our offense scoring 31 points, because, you know, we lived off the turnovers and big plays from our defense. So look for either a special teams – yeah, special
you got
teams
it.
Or a defensive touchdown this week.
That would be huge.
And yeah, that'd be huge. So I'm hoping, you know, we get 2 or 3 turnovers on defense, paired with a special teams touchdown or a defensive touchdown to, you know, give that extra boost to our offense. And then, you know, I'm going Illini 31, Purdue 30.
Oh, so you got a close one.
So they are going to get the touchdown that last drive. It's
I said 31, so I couldn't put Purdue at like 29, because then, you know, they would only need 30 to win, right?
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
I think I'm going to surprise you guys here. After last week, I was, you know, I thought Illinois was going to come out and cover in that game, but I thought they'd still get, you know, beat by a few scores. But there's just something deep down that I feel like Illinois may just come out and blow the doors off Purdue. And I don't know why that, I really have no idea why that's a feeling, but like I might see this game going like 34-14 Illinois, which would be, I mean, that's,
wow.
That's a bold prediction, but I don't know why. I just think the offense, I mean, Purdue played Iowa last week. Iowa put up points, and they should have put up more points had they not turned the ball over in the red zone, I think, a couple times. So if Illinois can take care of the ball, this Purdue defense is susceptible to giving up points. And I think, you know, Rod's going to stick to his game plan this week. And we talked about he maybe got a little spooked out early when things weren't going the Illini way. But I think they're coming for revenge after last week's performance. And I just think it's going to be I'm hoping there's a lot of fight song playing all game long.
Dan, I could see that happening. You know, the more I think about it, Purdue's coming off a game they shouldn't have won, right? We're coming off a game where, you know, we got blown out when we all thought it was going to be closer than that. Our offense came out, didn't do anything. So what tape is Purdue really going to watch? Like, are they really going to watch that game? Yeah, probably. But, you know, it's not really going to show them anything because we didn't really do anything. So I could see that some weird way working in an advantage for us. So yeah. I'm hoping that prediction's right by you. That's a good point you made.
Yeah.
Like trap game for Purdue here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what we were joking with Robert last week, it's a is it a must win or a can't lose for Illinois? It's
both.
Yeah, got to go with both.
But definitely a can't lose.
I don't know if that makes me the Mr. Illinois optimist. I think I myself more of an Illinois realist trying to. And for whatever reason, every once in a while, you just gotta ride with your team and hope they deliver a big win. So that's going to be my prediction. I'm going 34-14, believe it or not, and for the men in orange although I don't know what color jersey we'll be wearing on Saturday.
Maybe so. The men in blue.
Maybe the men in gray. Who knows? Although, when do you guys decide? Was it like Thursday or Friday to decide? Or when does the team find out what jerseys are?
Does the team vote on that? Or is it like the captain's pick?
It's usually the captain's, but I want to say we decided like Monday, because they would always have a mannequin dressed up with what we were wearing.
Mm.
Like right in our locker room, or right outside of our locker room.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Is there any pictures from practice this week?
I haven't seen anything yet. I'm curious, too, if we'll go with those same decals on the helmet, which were pretty cool.
Racial Justice I like
decals.
That.
Maybe maybe unlucky after last week's performance, but I mean, I think they're pretty sweet and make a statement. So it would be cool to see those being worn again. But I guess we'll see if we're the men in orange or the men in blue or the men in white or gray or whatever we decide.
Now the only reason why I asked about the practice is because generally what we used to do is if we were wearing orange that week, the offense always wears the color that we're wearing in the game.
Got
just
it.
Just so you get used to throwing to it.
And the quarterback always wear a different color jersey still?
Yeah, they wore red, I believe.
Yeah.
Little inside baseball with Mikey.
Don't touch those guys.
Tips and tricks.
Yeah, actually, I don't think they wore red. Maybe they wore, like, if we were wearing orange, they wore blue and vice versa.
Do you have a favorite jersey that you wore?
Probably the gray ghosts.
You like the grays? The
grays were sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, those were sick.
I remember the first time they unveiled those, I was like, because it seemed like Illinois hadn't had any crazy jerseys ever. You always see these Oregon teams and a lot of the big programs that have 15 different jerseys, and Illinois is, you know, white, blue, or orange every time. And they unveiled the grays. I was like, hey, finally, we get, you know, change it up a little bit here. I feel like
those grays are sweet.
Probably due for another uniform at some point, hopefully.
Yeah, every 4 years.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. So this is our third year in these.
Okay.
So I believe seasons. AJ Bush was the first year, so that's 2018. So 2020 now.
I was the first year.
I'm thinking of my reference points in terms of what I was watching.
All right. Anything else to add? Wrap this thing up.
No, we had fun talking ball, and hopefully everybody enjoyed it. Make sure you hit the subscribe button down below.
Yeah,
give us a follow, and remember, tweet us any questions you would like answered, and we'll do our best to try to get back to all of you.
Awesome. All right. Signing off, episode 2.